Concerned. Let's see. Hello, my Facebook family. Thank you for joining me here tonight. Thank you for being back by my side, Rebecca Williams.
Hey, hi. How are y'all?
She's a fellow teacher, fellow Houston area teacher.
Yes, and, I am.
And we have some concerns that we've got the right person here to answer for us tonight. And I always look at the wrong camera. Now I'm looking at the right camera. We have got in our midst today a lady that I met a few months back. And have you ever had someone, Rebecca, open your eyes to something that you didn't necessarily want to see, but you needed to see?
Yeah, all the time.
You've done it to me several times.
Well, today we have Miss Bridget Springer, and she is the financial lady. Introduce yourself to us, Bridget, and tell us a little bit about what you do.
Hey, everybody. Good evening. I'm Bridget, the financial lady. I help keep your money, and know that you're not your financial mistakes, and you can rise above and be that wealth warrior you want to be. So I don't want you to sit and feel like you are your financial mistakes, because you're not.
And that's the thing. Yes, Bridget. And that's the thing. Well, let me kind of give you a little bit on the background of how I met Bridget. Actually, my sister introduced Bridget to me, and Bridget actually met my sister, you know, just going about the course of her day. I believe y'all were at Emancipation Park. Is that where you met Kim?
At her job. Yeah.
And they struck up a conversation, and Bridget...
Kim strikes up a conversation. I know it.
Kim is that girl. Yes. But Kim has gotten some very interesting guests on here for us.
Yes, she has.
She's gotten some interesting guests, and guests that have a perspective that people really need to share. And the reason that I got Miss Bridget on here today is because when we sat down at my church, we had a podcast at my church, and she was talking about people's financial fitness. And that's a scary topic for a lot of people. Bridget, I'm not going to lie to you. It's scary for me. But when you started talking about specifically the large number of teachers that you work with in the capacity of financial advisor, and I'm going to be honest with you, you know, Rebecca, I didn't necessarily think teachers made the kind of money where they needed a financial advisor, but the ones that really have to think about that, we're probably the ones who need it more than anybody, right?
Right. Yeah, I was thinking that too. I was like, why would a teacher need a financial
she's gonna tell us,
other than to do taxes for?
she's gonna tell us. But one thing Bridget said to us, to Kim and I, as we sat there, she said, the thing that about teachers is that they don't even realize that we think that every month when they take out our TRS, they're taking that out. They're stacking that for our retirement. And that's going to be good. That's what we need. But Bridget, what did you tell me about the reality of how much of our just living expenses that TRS contribution is actually going to cover?
So probably after taxes, about 30%.
I could not believe it. And Bridget said, yes, that's absolutely right. About 30% is what that is going to cover. And I absolutely was floored when I saw that, because I'm a teacher. I'm close to retirement age. And Bridget, I came into the teaching field late. That was a second career for me. So I'm really kind of, I don't want to say upside down, but I'm really kind of in a position where I need some tools, and I need some tools right about now. Now, Bridget, for most of my teacher friends that are out there, and especially for some of the younger ones that are coming in right now, mm-hmm. where do we even start to be able to supplement our income so that we're not trying to go, and nothing wrong with it, but go work in Walmart as a greeter when it's time for us to retire?
So it's different areas you can start. Some of you may have heard of 403B or 457.
Yeah, I have.
You may have heard of a IUL. those are some of your avenues as far as, and know this, where you can start putting your monies, because there is a gap. The minute you become a teacher, you no longer contribute to Social Security.
Okay.
That stops the minute right. you become a teacher, right? Right? So there's a gap. You are responsible for the gap. TRS, yes, they're putting monies away. It's in a pension. Yes, that's great. You haven't paid taxes on this money, but that's only about maybe 30 to 40%.
And you I have a Roth RA too.
Okay. So that's after tax money. But you also got to look at how much money do you need when you retire?
Yeah.
Most people are not factoring in inflation. You need to factor in at least 3 to 5%. The cost of, as we know, the cost of gas today, 5 years ago, was two different worlds. The cost of milk, eggs, everything goes up.
Yes.
If we just look at housing, like if you rent.
Right.
It used to be able, you can go get an apartment, you know, $1,200. This same apartment or less.
When I was renting, Bridget, it was less than that.
But today, this same apartment,
yeah,
that's $3,000.
Wow.
So you have to factor that in. But it's a gap. When you walk in, most of the time we're not understanding that. That when you walk in, and this is pre-tax, you hadn't paid money on any of this money.
Now, is this standard for teachers all over the state of Texas, or are different school districts different?
If you are a teacher in Texas, meaning K through 12. Now, okay. If you work at a university as a professor, it looks a little different. Okay. But if you are K through 12, no, it is the same for every teacher. It does not matter. You're not contributing to Social Security anymore. You need to get a 403B, you need to get a 457, or you need to get an IRA. You need to have another vehicle that you're putting your money in.
Exactly.
Okay.
So if you want 100% of your income,
yes,
you need to have another vehicle to put this in. If you don't, and you're just relying on TRS, you will be short.
And you'll have to really, really adjust how you live in order to live that way. And that's not going to, and your contribution that you'll be pulling out is not going to factor in a cost of living increase. It is what it is, correct?
Yes, it is what it is. You're
now,
not.
We just voted. We just voted on Prop 9.
Right.
Okay, for retired teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So Prop 9 is...
explain it to everybody.
So if I can... Prop 9 is basically where it's adding more money into the retirement for teachers. So, and I think they cap it off at like $9,000, if I'm not mistaken. So, so that has boosted a little bit of money for retired teachers in Texas, but the law just passed this November.
Right.
So
that'll help somebody probably just getting in, right? But if you've been there, you've been there 15, 20 years, yeah, that'll help you a little. But if you haven't, one thing people feel like, oh, why do I need a financial advisor? Period. If you're looking to retire, you need to make sure when you retire, can I still have the amount of money that I'm making today? You need more because of inflation. Right. How does that look? Everybody needs that. That doesn't mean you have to make $300,000, $200,000, $100,000. Everybody needs that level of education and guidance. Because we all will retire one day.
Right.
And so what does that look like? Can I still be able to afford the lifestyle I have today? As you get older, you got to factor in other things as well.
Like what, Bridget?
So as you get older, right? Are we going to have some health challenges? Okay. Are we going to be, okay, we under Medicare. So if we got to go with Medicare only covers 80%.
Right.
You're responsible for 20.
Okay.
Okay, so you have to factor those things in. Making sure that you have insurance outside of work.
Explain that to me. What do you mean? So outside of what you have on your job, are you saying you need to have something just as good or probably better than what you have on your job in case that job is no more?
Better. You need to have where in the event life happens, you got sick, hurt, died. If you're married, single, whatever your situation is.
Right.
Are you protecting your assets? Everything that you work for. will that be protected? Insurance, so if you stop working due to an illness or injury, all your benefits, everything stops. So then if you're trying to go get insurance and you're sick, it may not work out for you. Why? Because you have an health issue. Get this insurance, life insurance, disability,
right?
Cancer insurance, you name it, hospital insurance. You can get all this stuff outside of work. So no matter if you decide to say, look, I don't want to be a teacher anymore, or right. I want to retire, I want to go in a different career, you already have this insurance. So you don't have to be, well, I'm going to get at my job. What if your job that you go to next don't offer it? You know that you always have it. One thing, no matter where, when I was working, right. I always kept insurance outside of my job. Always.
And is that a huge expense in addition to the insurance that you're already carrying through your job?
Everything is based on your age, your health, where you are. Okay. The difference with when you at work, you get a part of a group rate, right? Okay. It's a group. You get a group rate.
Okay.
You can always look at, like, when I work with clients, what is your budget? Tell me what you can afford. Then we adjust it to your budget. Okay. You tell me what do you need. So we want to make sure you're in that, going in that right direction. You need to have different types of insurance because you're trying to protect your assets. You do not want, you bought a house, right, but you have no insurance, and then you end up, something happens, and you end up losing what you purchased.
Like all you want to protect in a hurricane. Yep.
You want to be able to protect your asset. It's, we have insurance on our cell phones. We have insurance on all devices, all this stuff, car insurance. Why not have insurance to protect you? The most valuable asset is you. Bridget, why not protect you?
When we spoke recently, you gave me just a long list of things that I never thought about that would need to be protected, even as a person who does not have any heirs, that would I would need to protect as an individual. Mm-hmm. Things that I never even thought about. Can you tell us about some of those? Because I know right now some of my younger colleagues that have only been in education 2 or 3 years are saying, well, does anything that they're saying apply to me? Tell them why that everything that you're saying would apply to them.
Well, it doesn't matter your age. I don't want you to think because I'm 24, you know, I'm young, I don't have anything. What if you did buy a house? You have a car, you have money in the bank. You need to have things in writing. Right. So say you're married. Rebecca, are you married?
No, I'm not.
Okay, you're single. You built your life.
Married.
You're single, right? So yeah. You get to a point where whatever you've built, if you purchase a house, a car, whatever you have, those are your things.
Right.
If you don't protect those things and put it in writing and say, I want these items to go to this person, right?
Right.
Then the state of Texas will step in and they will decide for you.
Right. If you don't have it in writing, even if you have siblings or your parents or other people who are next of kin, that doesn't matter. You would still need to designate that in writing.
You have to put it in writing.
Wow.
If it's not in writing, it does not matter. If you can tell all day long, I want my daughter to have, I want my cousin, it does not matter. If you physically did not put things in writing, the state of Texas will step in and they will decide what happens to your estate. And then years later and money later, you know, all this time goes by, money later, and they will dissolve it how they see fit.
Wow. Wow. Okay. You know, one thing that you were telling me about too recently is this. We talked about this in terms of, let's say you're a teacher who is my age. Rebecca is a much younger teacher. You're a teacher who's my age, who I can say that I know that I don't want to be in the classroom until I'm 75 years old. I don't, and I won't. Okay. So not that I don't love my kids, but that's not what I want to be doing.
Yeah, you're going to have to go to the house long. At some point.
Yes. not everyone does.
That's true.
And they can be very effective. But here's the thing. That's just not my desire.
Right.
But what you were telling me is that And I have a friend who is a teacher who is in the classroom right now, who came out of retirement to go back into teaching, you know, because she loved it. You know, she loved what she was doing.
Yeah.
However, she found that some districts will not hire her back because she has been drawing retirement.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know about that. Tell me a little bit about that. So if I retire and decide, you know what, I really miss it and I want to go back.
You won't, but
how does that work? Why will some districts not touch that?
Everybody have their, I guess you could say, bylaws on how they deal with people coming out of retirement from TRS to come back into it. That I would say mess with your pension, what you're putting back. Now they have to start contributing back into it.
Okay.
So it's a different vehicle versus like a 401k where your money, you know, you pulled it out or rolled it over. A pension is different from your 401k. So the state, whatever their requirement, and that is not, you would have to tell me a little bit more about that because I have not met, out of all the teachers that I've dealt with, I haven't had any of them come out of retirement to go back to teaching.
Okay, that's interesting.
Oh, well, I know a couple that have done that.
Yeah, so I haven't personally had any clients that did that. Now, a lot of them, once they retire, they are doing something else that they want to do.
Right.
But you're saying that if they come back, certain districts are saying that they won't.
When I left my my last position as a teacher, mm-hmm. there was another teacher who was looking to move to another district outside of where she was because she had been offered a promotion and, you know, to be in a different capacity. And she said, okay. Well, that sounds like that's interesting. Now, she was retirement age. In order to come back into that district that I was in, they hired her back. But when she looked, and she'd been hired at this other position, she was being shown around the school and everything, she had been hired. But when they found out that she was going to be coming out of retirement, that she was in retirement and coming back into the classroom, they had to withdraw the offer. And I was wondering about that. And she said, you know, Crystal, some places do not hire teachers who are in retirement, who have gone into retirement. They just won't. And that's interesting. Is that something you can speak to, or would that be on a case-by-case basis?
I would say that's on a case-by-case basis. That will be on a case-by-case basis.
These districts are not hiring anybody back.
Yeah, that's on a case-by-case basis. I personally haven't had that situation. I'm dealing with them before they leave, or they're getting ready to leave, or, you know, I'm out and I need to make more money because I feel like I need to go work at Walmart because now my income today is not enough because they didn't plan for inflation. I would say that is the biggest thing that most people, not even teachers, but they're not factoring in inflation.
Okay.
And you have to factor in that the cost of living, just as you get a cost of living increase.
Right.
It's a reason for, because things cost more.
Exactly.
$100 bill in your pocket right now is really only worth about $45. It's not worth $100. It's only really worth $45.
Bridget, that's depressing. That's depressing.
Do you think we're going to come out of inflation soon? Or you think inflation is here to stay?
It's here to stay.
I mean, because the economy does ebb and flow. We know that.
It will. It ebbs and flow depending on what's going on in the world. Believe it or not, what goes over in other countries, other regions, does that affect us? Now, if you go to other
American problem. It's a world problem.
But if you go to other countries, they don't even deal. I'm gonna give you case in point, Japan.
Okay.
They have more debt than we do, definitely. But they don't have inflation issues. Every country is different.
Right.
Every country is different. I will share this with you, and I told Crystal this last night. I said, you need to have multiple sources of income. And that you have to have multiple sources of income.
That scares people,
especially if you
and Bridget, you're absolutely right. And you know, Rebecca agrees. We definitely agree with that. But here's the thing: if you're in that place where you're sitting in the classroom right now, and you know that you don't have time to go and grab a cup of coffee, and after school, many times your hours are also allocated for you because you've got things to do after school. How does a person, let's say a person who is 50 years old, they've been in the classroom 20 years, but they're not getting ready to leave yet. They've got about 15 years until retirement. Where do they start?
That's a case-by-case basis. You can't generalize that.
Okay.
I have to look at the individual. Some people have side hustles, whatever your gift, your talent, maybe you're tutoring. Is there a lot of debt that we're dealing with? Are we dealing with no debt?
Let me clarify that scenario. Okay. That's a younger person than me, but let's just say this. If that were me 10 years ago, that is the only job that I have in the classroom. Okay. Okay. I don't have any other debt because I'm not paying a car note. I am only paying my house note, and I don't have any credit card debt. But based on what we've just spoken about, I know that my income and my retirement, that's what's being allocated for my retirement, is only going to be approximately 30% of what I need at 50 years old with just those variables right there. What is going to be one of the things that I can do? And when you say, this is the scary part, when you say multiple streams of income, you don't mean someone to jump out there and automatically try to start doing four or five or six different things at a time. That's not what you're saying. No. You're saying you start from where you are. So from that perspective, what would that person in that situation, what could they do at that time? You spoke of a couple of things. Tell me about those.
Well, so if you're looking at a person that's 50, so you're saying this person has no money saved just with just TRS?
Well, this person, let's say this person has maybe about only $30,000 or $40,000 saved in a 403B.
Okay.
And their TRS.
Okay. So we need to find out how much money do you need if you're looking to retire. So if you're saying, look, I want to retire in 15 years, 65, mm-hmm. How much money do I need to be putting back now to get me to that number? I want to have an income of $5,000 a month.
Right.
That's my income. So then we're going to work at where you are, yes, and find out what is the deficit and then work from there. What vehicle do we need to put you in, or vehicles to say, if you start putting back X amount of dollars a month on compound interest between 5 to 7%, will that get you where you need to be? That's what we have to look at.
Right.
It is not a cookie cutter
approach. I understand what you're saying, because situation is different.
Everybody's situation is different. This is not a cookie cutter where if you just do this, plug it in. No, because what may work for Crystal will not work for Rebecca, because y'all are two different people,
right,
two different walks,
two
different ages. I don't know as far as savings, debt, credit, like where are we at,
right,
to really. So what is designed to do is create a tailored plan that works for you. And what if you have one spouse? Yeah. What if you have a spouse that's overfunded their retirement because you wasn't putting enough money back? So how do we leverage that?
Okay.
So it's not a cookie cutter approach. What I want people to understand when you're doing financial planning, it's some things you need to look at. You need to look at your spending, your credit. You also need to look at, what are you doing in your life today? What does that look like? Insurance. It's not just one way of looking at things. When I say have multiple streams of income, if your one income is not providing what you need,
right,
then you may need to look at other ways. How can I generate other sources of income? Because the other source can be your retirement plan. You have to be able to a point where that I understand it's a scary topic,
yeah,
and I don't It's scary because you don't know. You don't have a plan. You right. just doing. Yeah. But once you have the plan and know what to do, and when you start seeing the growth, that will give you a peace of mind to know that you got your life financially together.
Right.
So when life happens, because life will happen.
Yeah.
You just don't know when, you just don't how.
Right.
But when it happens, then you know that you're prepared for it.
Well, Bridget, you know, and that's the important thing. And that's one thing that you told me when we sat down in our group, because we had a group session last night with several people who were interested and kind of taking, and it's about taking control when you don't, when you feel like you're out of control. I mean, not out of control, but when you feel like you don't have any control. And everybody I know, most people who are teachers, a lot of us don't think about that. We feel that we've got our teacher's retirement, and when we get ready to retire, that's going to be it, and that's going to be coming in, and we're going to be okay. We don't even consider the fact that when you said that's going to give you about 30% of what you need to live on, that blows your hair back.
Because I would say this, a lot of this information has not been taught. Okay.
No.
So it's like you kind of grow up. I grew up in a household where, you know, nobody telling you about financial planning and saving and investing and growing your money. If you would have put back $200 at age 20 and never touched it every month.
Right.
And by the time you turn 40, you got about a half a million.
And see, I don't have that excuse because my dad is a financial advisor. He's retired, but
did you I was at that age?
No, but my problem was I just didn't listen. So I had the advice. I just, you know.
Yeah.
But money is personal though. I think it's environmental.
Okay.
A lot of times we're in a world today where, you know, social media and buying things, everything is at your access. You can pick up your phone and you can purchase whatever you want to purchase in just a tap.
Yes.
So the temptations to spend is greater because it's things in place where you can just spend.
It's easy.
It's easy. But things when it comes to saving, oh no, I don't want any restrictions. I still want to live my best life and do what I want to do.
Right.
When life happens, I lost my job. I don't even have at least 3 months of my expenses saved.
Right.
So if you're saying your monthly expenses is $2,000, so you need to have at least $6,000 saved.
Yeah.
So with that said, Bridget, even young people, would one of your pieces of advice be that a young person needs to go ahead and begin trying to invest in a house, or is buying a house not always the right option for everyone?
It's not a cookie cutter approach. It really depends on the person. Okay. I would not put somebody and make them get debt if they're. If you're not ready for certain things, don't push yourself in a position.
Okay.
You don't have to conform to what everybody is doing.
Right.
I don't force people. Oh no, you do. No. Okay. What do you want to do?
Right.
Okay. So what are your goals? Okay. What is it more important for you to have liquid cash? I'm cool with living in my apartment or in a townhouse. I'm cool with that. So if that's what you want to do, let's focus on that. Let's make sure. Okay, so if you're living there, that's cool. I think we are always trying to do what generations before were doing.
Okay.
And we want to, you have to do it this way. This is the only way you can do it. And that's not true. I go off of what your goals, Rebecca, if you sat down with me and say, look, these are my goals. This is what I want to do. This is what we're going to focus on.
Okay.
If you say you want to buy a house, we'll buy a house. I don't want to buy a house. So what are your goals? I want to be debt free. I don't want to owe anybody. And I want to have at least $30,000 saved in my, okay, let's work on that.
You said
that's what you go off of.
You said something very interesting last night, which is something I know people don't even think about. You said, okay. Because one of our people in the group said they had a child who was a disabled child who was getting disability, but if they start working and earning more money than the Social Security. Kind of explain that, the Social Security, how does that work? Would be adjusted because there's more money coming into the house?
Yeah. So a special needs child, you cannot leave them anything over $2,000. They can't have anything over $2,000, right? So if you leave them life insurance, if they're getting Social Security or SSI, you cannot leave them literally large sums of money. If you did, it has to be in a special needs trust, and it's only for their needs. Wow. That's all it's for, because you don't want to mess with their government benefits. So if I have teachers out there who does have a child that's special needs, right? Yeah. You need to make sure that you're doing everything to preserve the child's funds that they get from the government, because they have to be able to have certain assistance. Right. You don't want to mess that up. So you have to make sure that something happens to you, you pass away, that they are protected, that their benefits are intact, and nothing disrupts that. That's the most important thing. So that's a part of doing estate planning for yourself and the child that special needs, because the last thing you want to do is to disrupt their benefits. Because as you know, it's hard getting those benefits. So we don't want to lose them.
So I get it.
Yeah.
You have to put things in writing. I have a lot of clients who have special needs children, right? So if something happens to you, what is the contingency plan? Who is going to step in and take care of the special needs child? Who's going to do that? And so it needs to be someone that's responsible that can do that. But you have to make sure whatever you do, that you don't disrupt their benefits.
Right.
Exactly. So that's important of, you know, doing your estate planning, having your will, your medical power of attorney, your financial power of attorney, guardianship, who's going to have legal guardianship over said child.
Okay, Ms. Bridget, we have a comment, and the comment says, can a special needs child be willed a house? Because I know some teachers who have special needs kids. So
they cannot.
So what it sounds like to me is that I would be very afraid if I was the parent or the guardian of a special needs child or adult, if anything happened to me, because where does that leave that person?
So when you have, that's why you go through the proper protocol. You are dealing with an attorney. You need to have stuff set up. They have actual attorneys that work with, if you need to set up a special needs trust, that money is just for their needs. Literally, that's all it's for. Whatever they need day in and day out. Okay. It is not to make their life better, meaning you cannot, I want them to live in a 400,000 square foot house, and I need them to drive, have this type of car, and I want them to, no.
You can't.
It is just for, no.
So wait a minute. So
they can have the accommodations of where they live, but what they're leaving them can't be of value to the point where you sell it, now we have extra money, because what the state will come in and do is say, okay, you have all this extra money. Well, we're going to start taking some of it because we've been caring for the child through government benefits.
Yeah. And I learned that too when my parents and I, when we were going through, we still are finalizing some things, but because my brother is older than me, they wanted to leave. They thought that they could leave everything to him for tax purposes, like, because they didn't want me to have to pay insurmountable taxes. Mm-hmm. But we found out through that. That's why I said, I can attest to that. We found out that they would have to leave everything to me. It's just the two of us. So they would have to leave everything to me because all of his benefits and everything is in place. All that stuff.
For the rest of his life.
Yes, right. For the rest of his life.
So if he takes on anything else financially, which he wouldn't, his name would just be on it. I would still have to take care of it. But they said his name can't even be on the paperwork. Wow. Everything has to. If in the event something happens to my mom and dad, everything has to go through me.
And God forbid, Miss Bridget, and Rebecca is a teacher. In a situation like that, what if something happened to Rebecca?
Then what is Rebecca's contingency plan? Who will step in? Yeah, if it's another sibling, is it another relative?
Okay.
You have to map that out. You have to map that out today.
Think that far ahead.
Yeah.
Because you're not the end all be all. Something happens to you, then who will step in to care for him?
Yeah. And
so it's layers to things. And so one thing I know a lot of us, most of this information you don't know.
Yeah.
So you just don't know what you don't know. So that's why I say you're not your financial mistakes. I don't want you to get caught up in so much fear and anxiety and mad at yourself, because these are things that is not normal that you supposed to know. Right. So, but now when you know,
this isn't shared with us. You know, this
thing,
like my niece was saying last night, I just finished a financial literacy class and she told you, I didn't know any of this. Anything that you're saying, I didn't know. And at that point, you gave us a checklist. Now, Miss Bridget, we're going to have people, and most of our viewership is going to come in after this live broadcast, but you gave us a checklist. Can you just read us a couple of things off of that checklist that I didn't even know needed to happen, that you said needed to happen for everyone? And that checklist had about 10 things on it. Okay, things look, I never thought about that I would need.
So
start on that checklist.
First thing, life insurance outside of work. Outside of work.
Okay.
Anything outside of work.
Okay.
You need to also look at, do a policy review. Is it a term? Is it whole life? There's nothing wrong with term. There's nothing wrong with whole life. Mm-hmm. If you decide to get a term, you just need to know it will term in 10, 15, 20, or 30 years.
Okay.
That's why.
You need to know that it's term. You can get a lot for less. That's right. Literally why. Nothing wrong with term.
Okay.
I personally have term, but I also have a permanent policy.
Okay.
So there are things that you have to assess and look at, right? Okay. That what is your situation?
All right.
But you need to know, if you have a 10-year term, what are we going to do? Because it's going to continue to go up monthly at 10 years.
Okay.
As you get older, insurance will cost you more. If something happens to you, get heart attack, stroke, cancer, things happen to you, it makes it difficult for you to now try to get additional insurance.
Okay.
Get insurance while you're young, outside of work.
Okay.
So no matter where you go, because a lot of people say, oh, my job will pay for it. No, I had a client.
Yeah.
Her brother died, and how he died, according to them, was suicide.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't pay it out.
Wow.
Yeah, especially if you have term life insurance, they have limits to what happens if you die. They'll pay for this.
For this circumstance,
they pay for this versus the whole life insurance, which just takes care of everything.
Regardless. No, let me correct you. Term and whole life are the same.
Okay.
Does not matter. Only big difference between term and whole life will cover you to age 100.
Okay.
So if you died in a suicide past 2 years, the policy will pay out. If you died of a heart attack, stroke, cancer, diabetes, if you had term a whole life, it'll pay out.
Okay.
According to the death certificate, that's what they're looking at. Your biggest difference between term and whole life, term, it will term in a certain period of time.
Okay.
Whole life says we're going to cover you all the way to age 100. Right. Your premium does not change.
Okay.
That's the difference. It does not matter. Only way, now I'm going to share something with you. The first 2 years of any life insurance, term or whole life, is contestable. If they found out that you lied, say you got it, knowing that you had cancer, but you lied on the application and said, no, I don't have cancer.
They don't have to pay it.
Not those first 2 years, no. Because they can come back and say, oh, we found out once we got the report, we went through your medical, you lied, now we just give you all your premiums back.
Gotcha.
What if they didn't know they had cancer during that time?
Well, that's the difference. That's how it will show up. It will show up once they do all the medical. That's why it takes time, because they're going back into your medical history.
Gotcha.
To see. It's kind of hard to say you didn't know you had cancer, because you're taking biopsies and tests and all of this.
Right.
Unless you didn't do any testing at all and you just signed up and then you got cancer later. They will see it in the time frame.
Okay, that's what I was saying.
They will see it in the time frame. But that's why I want people to understand. Right. When you get to life insurance, that don't think it's things that cannot make them pay. If you lied, if you misled, you did something when you wasn't supposed to.
Right.
That's why I say it's on a case-by-case basis.
Insurance companies don't want to pay money out.
Well, no, it's a risk.
Okay, Ms.
Brown. Yeah, it's a risk. Yeah.
Okay, we have the first thing on that list was everybody needs a life insurance policy outside of work. What's next for people?
Financial power of attorney.
And tell us what that is.
Financial power of attorney. In the event you're not able to handle your financial business, you got sick, you got hurt, you need an actual document saying this person is representing me. They're able to call my insurance company. They are able to pay my bills. They're able to go to the bank. They're able to buy, sell property, whatever I need them to do. They are my advocate for me that I've appointed. If you do not have that,
right,
things cannot get done for you.
Like what? Like if you have a mother or a sister and you just say, well, they can do it. They know that needs to be in writing for what reason?
That has to be in writing because that's what's required.
Wow.
When you walk into the bank and the bank says, okay, this person show me proof that you have access to this account and they've given you authority to do so.
Okay.
If you don't have it, they will not help. You can't do anything.
So
it's important for you to get that done.
Something happened to me. And and Kim walked into the bank and says, well, this is my sister. So she's not able to do this for herself. So I need to be able to withdraw this money to take care of her. She could not do that.
Nope.
Unless I have that in writing.
Correct.
Okay. Everybody needs a insurance policy outside of their job. Everybody needs a document stating financial power of attorney. What is next?
Medical power of attorney.
What's the difference?
Medical, in the event medically that you are not able to make decisions for yourself, who will make them for you? Who will have access to your medical records?
Can't just be your next of kin.
It can be whoever you want it to be.
I mean,
but you must put it in writing.
Because most people don't have that. I haven't put any of that in writing, Ms. Bridget.
So medically, what happens is if you don't put it in writing and you had a medical emergency.
Right.
A judge will make a decision.
Oh,
wow. Oh, okay. Okay. That's number three.
Okay.
Medical power attorney. What's the next thing? And that's why I wanted to have this show, Rebecca, because everything, I consider myself a pretty smart cookie.
Right.
But I didn't know any of this. And I want my fellow teachers to be sitting in a place for making decisions from a place of knowledge too. What's the next thing, Miss Bridget?
And see, sign on a bank account.
Sitting down with Miss Bridget. Say that again.
Signer on a bank account.
That's different from financial power of attorney.
Yep, because banks have their own set of rules.
Okay.
So you need to do their paperwork.
I have it.
Okay.
You need to do their paperwork. So if you have an aging parent, you have a business, you need to make sure there is a beneficiary and a sign on a bank account, because that money will sit in the bank if you don't have a beneficiary listed.
Wow.
And that's on all bank accounts, not just one, all. Somebody reached out to me, it was a referral. His wife had just died.
Right.
And she opened up a bank account.
Right.
Did not list him as beneficiary. She died unexpectedly.
Right.
Now it's about $12,000 sitting in the bank. He has to get an attorney. He has to go through all this red tape, even though that's his wife.
Right.
Does that matter? She opened up the account and did not put him
on it.
Yeah.
Wow. Just probably not trying to be facetious. She just...
No, it was nothing to be facetious. Nothing like that. But now he's in a situation. She passed away. He had a stroke, ended up in a facility. Now he's in a position where he's about to lose his home and his money sitting in an account that he has no access to.
Oh, wow.
So I think...
Do they have children?
No.
Oh my gosh.
So it doesn't matter. Like, even if she put the kids' name, she didn't put anybody's name.
Okay.
So I think the biggest thing I told Kim last night, everybody feel like we got all the time in the world and you don't. You must have things in writing. Do you know how long it's going to take for him to get an attorney? Now he has to pay money
to get an attorney. That's right.
To get the money.
And she could have just had a document in place.
And all she did, when you open the bank account, it asks you, who do you want as beneficiary? You just put the name as soon as you open it.
Miss Bridget, how important is it? You've given us four different things that I didn't know nothing about. Rebecca knew some of them, but some of them we both didn't know anything about that are vital for each person to have. If you're a person living and existing in this world and you do business and you simply exist, these are things that we need to have in place. Now, how important is it for us to let other people know what we are doing if we are... We got to tell somebody that these things are in place, right? So, correct. Who do you know? Who you know that you can trust to do these kind to do this?
Well, that's your circle of friends. Is that your immediate family? Everybody's situation is different. I have clients who none of their children are over their stuff. It may be a close friend. It may be the neighbor. It depends. It may be their financial planner. It really just depends on the person and their situation. Everybody doesn't have this kumbaya wonderful family that they can rely on. It's fine. You can appoint anyone. It does not have to be family. So, but you need to appoint someone though.
Okay. And when a client comes in and sits down with you, you can actually interview them and ask them the different circumstances surrounding their finances. And should anybody be embarrassed to come in and they haven't started?
No. One thing I met a lady yesterday and the first thing she said out of her mouth was, "I'm just scared." And that is the common, that is part of the common emotion.
Yes.
Word that I get, especially with women.
This is a scary process.
It's scary. She said, "I'm so scared. I'm nervous."
Right.
A lot of times people think I can't afford a financial planner. I get that all the time.
Right.
But it's emotional because really we have to be vulnerable. You have to be able to say, "Look, I know I haven't been spending my money like I should, but I don't want nobody to judge me." So a lot of times that's what it is. You don't want anyone to judge you. I'm not here to judge you. I want you in a position of power over your money and authority over your life.
Right.
Because that's going to give you the confidence that you need and the peace of mind.
Right.
So I have to a lot of times break down the barrier from the fear, the anxiety, some of them straight panic, you know, because it's like, I don't want to tell all these mistakes I made, and what is she going to think about me?
Yeah, because you've got to basically get financially naked with that person and be honest about where your money is. And if you're 50 years old and you haven't made any kind of plans outside of what is laid down to you, that first 15 minutes that you signed your paperwork for your job 20 years ago, you're probably not in a great situation, and you don't even know you're not in a great situation. So that's why I wanted people to be able to hear some of the things, because everything that you said here, and when we talked yesterday, I said, everything that you're saying, Miss Bridget, you need to say that, because there's not one thing that you said here that doesn't apply to everyone that is a teacher in any school district. It applies. Now, some people have their things in order more than others, but everything you said, when you named that list and you only went through four things, I know that there were 10 things on that list at least. And
see, you brought something to my attention. I've just always assumed if something happened to my parents, right, I was going to take full responsibility. I still am.
What if something happens to you?
Full responsibility for my brother. It never occurred to me.
Yes.
What if something happens to you?
That's right. Yeah. Right. That thought never crossed my mind.
And that's a discussion that now.
And that's a discussion I have. So like when I'm talking to you, I'm all in your business. Why? Because I need to know if you have a brother that's special needs or a sister that's special needs, and you have two parents who are still alive. Okay, so what does that look like? That's going to pass down because you're the responsible one in the family. So how does that look?
Right.
What does that look like for you? So, because I know that's going to become a financial responsibility for you.
That's right. That's a given. Yeah.
That's a given. And so I factor all of that in financial planning. I don't just say, "Oh, we just talking about you." No, I got to say, okay, look, do you care for your parents? You care for a brother? Like, so what happens with life if you had to care for a niece or a nephew or something like that? That affects you. Do we need to, okay, so let's talk to them. What do they have in place? Do they have their stuff together? Because that's going to affect you financially. So we have to, you can't just discuss one thing. We have to discuss it all. Because I know that it's a trickle-down effect. It's going to come towards you at the end of the day. Wow. And so it's just much more than, and I know it's scary. I know it's being vulnerable. I'm going to be vulnerable with you. I'm going to share my things and what I've went through. So then you don't be, you won't make the same mistakes. Or because I had stuff in place and when life happened, I was able to be a support. And I didn't have to worry about money and insurance and a wheel and all that stuff was done. That gives you a peace of mind. You will thank your future later for doing it today. The most thing is that when people don't know, they won't move.
Right.
And they won't. And it's really getting, I deal with a lot of getting the, breaking down the barriers and the insecurities and the fears and the anxiety behind. Because it's really, they feel like you're in sheer judgment of them. And I'm like, I'm not here to judge you. But just to get past that, and that's, if you don't hear anything I hear to say today, I know we say a lot.
Yeah.
But get the help that you need. Really, because it helps.
Yeah.
When you have time, because the worst thing is that you're going to leave this financial nightmare
someone else
to someone else. And it gets to the point, if you worked and built all of this, I would not want you to lose it or allow the state of Texas to figure out what they want to do with it.
Yeah.
And now, because that's how you mess up your generational wealth, right, where you could have had a home. You bought it at $50,000. Now a home is worth $500,000.
Right.
And because we did not have a simple paper, just one paper, piece of paper.
Right. That only took 2 minutes to sign.
Yeah. But it's really the fear of it all, though. It really is.
Miss Bridget, we only have, you see how fast that hour went?
I know.
I'm keeping up with the time, and I know
Rebecca and I are just like this at the edge of the table going like this. Okay, let me, I want you to pinpoint one other thing before we go ahead and get all of your information and you give all of your information for contact. But tell us, and I didn't know this either, tell us why it's extremely important for everyone to have a will as well as a trust, even if you're single.
Your will is saying, these are my wishes.
Okay.
This is what I want. And I am making the decision, not the state of Texas. Literally, the will is you saying these are your wishes, right?
Okay.
Trust is the lockbox. Because a will can be contested, but a trust is the lockbox because the trust is set up for said person. It's only set up for who you want it to go to. And nobody can come in and say, no, they're not supposed to have that trust. No, they are supposed to because I set it up just for them. These things don't activate until you pass away.
Okay, why both? Why are both necessary?
Everybody's situation is different. I'm going to say this. I have some people where they have an estate where they don't need a trust. Everybody doesn't need it because it depends on, so it's not a cookie cutter.
Okay.
It's not cookie cutter. So it's knowing the difference and do you need it or not? That's what we need to find out. Everyone needs a will. But do everybody need a trust? Everybody may not need a trust. If you telling me I live in a retirement home, I don't own anything, I don't have any stocks, it's just me, I get my Social Security, that's all I get, it's no need for a trust.
Okay.
You understand what I'm saying? Yes. But if you're telling me, look, I'm a single mother, or I'm married, I have children, and all my kids are under the age of 10 years old. Right. You pass away, what happens? If I leave them all this money, can we say, okay, they'll get money at 25 and 30 and 40? Mm-hmm. You need to set up then a trust. You need to set up a trust.
What if you're a small, what about a small business owner? Because I know a lot of teachers now that are starting their small businesses. They're retiring, or even some of the ones that are still in the classroom, they are starting adjunct small businesses.
Perfect. Yeah. You need to protect it. Everything it needs to be in writing, because if that is how you say your small business now is your 100% primary how you make your living, right?
Right.
You need to have a sign on the business bank account, because everything is now under the business name. If you're still getting money from the business, who knows to say, where does this money go? Like the way mine is set up, I'll give you a perfect example. If I pass away, my husband has access to all business accounts,
right?
Everything on it, the company that I'm affiliated with, okay. His name is on it. They know the all monies will go directly to him.
Got you. And that's in writing.
That's in writing.
Okay, so real quick, I have a friend, a best friend that's a social worker. And I know we talk about teachers, but she's a social worker. Mm-hmm. And she has small children. Mm-hmm. She has a five-year-old, a six-year-old, and now an 18-year-old. So her biggest thing is, if something happens to me, I want to make sure my kids are straight.
Right.
We talk about that all the time. So how could she go about doing that with small children? And an 18-year-old that's getting ready to go off to college.
And that's still, an 18-year-old wouldn't know what to do. Do not leave an 18-year-old $300,000. You need to set up a trust.
Right.
So you she needs to set up a trust.
Of them?
And she would set up, it's really, you putting everything in writing. A trust is not like you're setting up an account. Right. A trust is you're putting it in the will. You're saying, look, something happens to me. Is she single? Right? Yeah. Okay. So who is going to have legal guardianship? That's one she needs to put in writing.
Right.
Is it going to be their child's father? Or is it grandma? Is it auntie? Is it whomever it is? It
needs to be in writing. I know I'm one of the legal guardians. I know.
Okay.
She asked.
So do you have legal documentation that says, once I pass away, Rebecca has legal guardianship? Not that we didn't talk about it. That you actually put these things in writing. Who is over, if she has life insurance outside of work? You can put the trust, she can set up an account and say the money will go into the trust. And once they turn 25, you get X amount. You turn 30, you get X amount. You have to put all of this in writing. Not have a conversation.
Right.
This is in writing. Because what happens is, if you don't have it in writing, then the judge will determine if they're going to go with you or they're going to go to foster care.
Wow. Okay.
So if she puts all this in writing legally, I know we got 4 minutes.
Wait, what?
You have to put it in writing. Having a conversation does not help you.
So, wow, the kids can really go into foster care.
Yes, because who is legally, if their father is not, because normally how it is, a chain of command.
Yeah.
Parent. Okay. So where's the father? Yeah. If the father is not in place,
right,
then where do they go?
Yeah.
Well, who's going to financially take care of these children? Because now we go from, we have no children, to now we got 3.
Yeah. Yeah.
So who is going to take care of these kids? Does she have life insurance? Do we need to put it in the trust so the kids can get it at a certain time in life? You have to put that in writing.
Okay, Miss Bridget, you said a mouthful.
Oh my God, I know.
Yeah. And that's why I said yesterday at the end of our meeting, I said, Miss Bridget, can you find it in your schedule to come onto the podcast tomorrow? Because I can guarantee you, am I right, Rebecca? Probably none of our colleagues are like us, and we're educated people.
Right.
We had no idea that we needed anything that you're talking about.
Yeah, because I think we just assume when somebody dies, the next one is going to take care of all the responsibility.
But it's a step. Unless you put it in writing.
But that's what I'm saying. Yes, that the assumption is,
yeah,
you know, when you die, whoever the spouse is, whoever the kids are, they're going to take over the responsibility.
But it also goes to your estate. So say you don't have any of this in writing. You didn't put any of this stuff in writing, right, whatsoever. It will go to your estate, and the state of Texas will figure it out for you.
Oh, geez. Okay, Miss Bridget.
I don't trust them to figure out.
That's what happens. Everybody has a situation. Everybody has literally, if you don't have a will, you don't put this stuff in writing, the state of Texas will step in and do what they do best.
And that's why I like your checklist. So when we sit down with you for an appointment, now, let me ask you this, without divulging any type of fees or monetary amounts, most teachers who are working as a teacher in our area, in the Houston area, they can afford to sit down with a financial planner. You can work within the budget of a teacher.
Yes.
Okay. How would we get in? What do we need to do to get in contact with you to get started? And how long does the process take?
So I normally do a consultation, 30 minutes. That's no cost to you. I need to get to know who you are. What's your situation? What is going on? Then I can talk about that. Can be done virtually. Okay. That is at no cost. What I can do is put, and I'm not for sure, I'm putting things in the chat. So tell me, do I need to send that over?
Okay. If you put it in the chat, it's going to show up. And also, if you have it, put that barcode, not that barcode, but the QR code in that chat for your, as well as your telephone number, because people can just scan it in that.
So chat, I put in my digital business card.
Okay.
So hopefully when you click on it, you should be able, that's my actual digital business card. Okay. And so tell me if it shows.
I don't see it showing up yet. The last comment I saw was Kim's at 7:31.
So when I put it in the chat, what do you see? It says private chat and comments. So I don't know.
Okay. Well, you know what? If not, I will make sure that it gets in there, Bridget. But why don't you tell us? Tell us how, if someone wanted to, we'll make sure all of the things that you're placing get in there if I have to do it myself. But can you verbally tell us if someone wanted to go ahead and schedule a time to have that conversation with you? Because right now, all of us are still out on break.
They can go to my website, to thefinanciallady.com.
TheFinancialLady.com. Okay.
Literally, the financial lady.
Literally, I thought that's something you came up with.
No, that's her.
That's the name. That is the name of my business, yeah. The Financial Lady.
Short and sweet.
I thought that was something Crystal came up with.
Yeah.
Because I was like, why she put financial lady? Okay.
Yes.
No, it is.
Oh, my God.
Look, it's the Financial Lady, Bridget Springer, LLC. Literally, that's the name of my business.
I apologize, Bridget.
No, nothing to apologize for. I don't know. I put my booking link. I don't know. And I'll send it to you, Crystal. I do have a booking link. So if you want to schedule your 30-minute virtual time with me, you can click. You have access to my calendar. You click on the link, pick the time, date, and it automatically sets up everything, and I will see you virtually, and we can talk about whatever you need support in. What I want people to understand and take away, and I know we're a little bit over.
Okay, go ahead.
Move.
Yes.
Don't feel like you have to have everything figured out, because you're not.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're not your financial mistakes.
Okay.
Say that you're not your financial mistakes.
You can start
some things you can start from where you are.
Yeah.
Don't feel like, because what I don't want you to do is bury your head in the sand and put the sheets over your head and I'm not gonna do anything. And no, don't do that.
Yes. And
have that courage to keep the promise to yourself.
Right. And you know what? So many times we don't do things for ourselves. You know, to sit down, I've often said I want to sit with a financial planner, but I don't have the kind of money that a financial planner would need to. I don't need that because I don't have the kind of money. But you, but just from the list that you just named, I need.
Oh, baby.
Yeah. I need to sit down with you. And you sent me my link for my consultation. And that's a promise that I'm going to make to myself, that I'm going to do that. Now, let me ask you this. Well, let me say this to you, and this is the last comment that I will take in here. Someone said, Kim says, life changes make finances different. Divorce, marriage, birth, death. So if any of those things have happened in your life, and some of that has happened to everybody,
right,
that makes you a candidate to sit down with a financial planner. And culturally, Bridget, I know a lot of times African Americans just don't feel like they're in the place where they need to sit down with a financial planner. That's something that a lot of times people say, well, that's for someone else. And that's not the case.
Right.
And if no, it's not the case. You need advice. You need guidance when it comes to your money. I deal with the horror stories.
Okay.
My husband just died. Nothing was in my name. The house is not in my name. And I was married for 20 years.
Yeah.
Then I learned that I married a man or married a woman. They were divorced two or three times before me. And then the pension or the 401k was in the ex-spouse's name.
Yeah.
And we have not done our due diligence. Let me say something to you. I am married. I am my husband's third wife.
Okay.
Before we even said I do, read the divorce decrees.
Okay.
Made sure everything was switched over in my name. Certain things you do have to wait until you get married because you have to have the marriage certificate, right? Okay. Especially with jobs.
Yeah.
Life insurance was already in place before we got married.
Right.
All of this stuff was done. Wills, medical power of attorney, all this stuff was done.
Right.
So it is, you need to know that. This is just simple. You married a person. They had a whole life before you.
That's right.
Right.
So don't think, they'll fix it. No, you can make sure it's taken care of.
Okay.
And you make sure it's done. So don't just bury your head in the sand and just, those are things when you are, we are planning a wedding. Beautiful. It's just, it's not even one day, it's 30 minutes.
Right.
The marriage is what, it's 30 minutes, but you got to make sure life, because I had a couple, young lady, 33 years old, husband died a month later after getting married.
Wow. Oh my goodness. And nothing was in place.
Nothing was in place.
Wow.
Because we're too big.
Done before the wedding, right?
A lot of this you can get done before the wedding.
Because you need a marriage certificate.
Now, like when it comes to jobs and that's, certain things you do need. But some of this stuff, if you've been living with a person for longer than 6 months, we are community property state.
And with that in mind,
common law marriage.
We gotta jump off of here because we got somebody waiting to come in for the next podcast. But Bridget Springer, I want to thank you so much.
I'll be seeing
much.
You soon, Bridget.
And if we
Rebecca, I look forward to it.
And if we need to, if you are watching and you are a teacher here, I always look at the wrong camera. You are a teacher here in the state of Texas. If you recently retired a teacher, if you just started teaching, you are sitting in the same seat as a lot of us. Don't feel bad because you don't know. I didn't know any of this. But now, if I refuse to move with the knowledge that I need to be able to have these things in place, then shame on me. Mm-hmm. So as we say every week, Miss Bridget, I want to thank you again for sharing with us tonight. And we'll make sure that all of your information gets in that chat. But Rebecca, as we say every week,
we can do it.
See you later.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.